when the McAllister family left on their Christmas vacation.
Did we miss the flight? No, you just made it. Yeah!
They forgot one small thing.
Have yourself.
I have a terrible feeling. Christmas.
Did you lock up?
Let yourself be light.
Do we set the timers on the lights?
Mm-hmm. From what else could we be forgetting?
Our troubles will be ours.
Kevin!
Home Alone.
Police in the northern suburbs are on the lookout for a pair of burglars who are calling themselves the Wet Bandits.
We know that you're in there.
It's Santa Claus and his elf.
Get off my property.
This is my house. I have to defend it.
Where's your mother?
My mom's in the car.
Where's your father?
He's at work.
What about your brothers and sisters?
I'm an only child.
Where do you live?
Can't tell you that.
Why not?
Because you're a stranger.
He's a kid. I mean, what can a kid do to us?
Kids are stupid. I know I was.
You still are, Marv.
This is it.
Ow! I don't care if I have to get out on your runway and hitchhike. I am going to get home to my son.
Ah! Yes! Ah! Ah! Where are you, you little creep? I'm gonna kill that kid!
Why'd you take your shoes off?
Why are you dressed like a chicken?
Gus Polinski, Polka King of the Midwest. If you have to get to Chicago, we'll gladly drive you.
Hey, guys.
Yesterday, he was just a kid. But tonight, he's a home security system.
You guys give up, or you're thirsty for more?
From John Hughes.
You know, I got a feeling this is going to be your best Christmas ever.
A family comedy without the family. Home Alone.
Are you here all alone?
I'm 8 years old. You think I'd be here alone? I don't think so.
Directed by Chris Columbus, coming November 16th.
Look what you did, you little jerk.
Oh, phlegmwad.
And I looked at some trivia, and I don't know if they still do it now, but this was always shown here in the States. I think it was like Thanksgiving night or something. I don't think it was New Year's Eve. I think it was always It's a Wonderful Life. So it was always shown traditionally here. Do you know what other country that I saw has shown this traditionally every year since 1990?
I don't know.
That would be the Central European state of Poland.
Well, I never. How interesting.
I saw that about 6 minutes before we started recording. And I was like, hey, Poland, we were just there.
We were. We've just, well, yeah, I feel kind of still jet lagged, even though there's only an hour difference, but...
Only an hour difference? Yeah. Jet lagged for an hour?
Well, it's obviously not jet lag. It's just from the absolute insane sleep schedule that you have when you go to these CDPR events, which, by the way, thank you, CDPR, for inviting us and having us over and always looking after us. It was a lot of fun, but I've never in my life stayed up drinking until 7 a.m. until Sunday night, which was just ridiculous, but a lot of fun.
I would say Amsterdam, we stayed up till I think it was like five or six. It's five.
Yeah.
I think what they did. But yes, the Gwent Masters, the final one. Yes, big thanks to Ryan. I think we saw it Sko.
Sko, yeah, Sko. People have said it differently all weekend. And I asked him and I can't remember how he told me.
No, but we heard Pavel Berzha say it, and we looked at each other like, oh, is that how you say it?
Yeah, I feel bad. I pronounced probably all of their names wrong, but yeah. We try.
Well, Ryan, though, there you go. We'll never mess that one up. But yes, big thanks to them. It was an amazing, amazing event. You know, we got a little goodie bag there. Got to see and meet so many people that, again, we've spoken to and interacted with throughout the years. For someone like me, you know, getting in on Gwent 6 years ago, you know, these are people mm-hmm. I've heard about, you know, seen online and all that. Now actually getting to talk to them, put a face to it. It was unbelievable. And Poland itself, Warsaw, is an incredible city.
It's beautiful. And it was so lovely that the first couple of days we were there, there was beautiful snow. I usually hate snow because in England, snow is icy, wind, slippery, dangerous. But in Warsaw, it was just the most perfect powdery snow. And we could, you know, kick it around outside the CDPR head office. And it was just perfect. So I really enjoyed the snow there. And we were all wrapped up warm and going for pierogies and drinking wine. It was just so, so nice.
Yeah, it's the same thing with Texas, where we generally get ice. We rarely, rarely get snow. And so, like you said, the first night we're there, I'm walking around by myself and just the crunch of the snow. Oh, I was like, oh, the crunch, so crunchy. Every time I walked there, I was like, crunchy, crunchy snow.
Yeah, I just wanted to walk around all night. The snow ASMR is just so good.
Yep, it was awesome. Make sure to check out our social, especially the Insta. We got some pictures on there. Actually, they might just be on the story, but we'll put some more on there as
I'll update them, yeah. That's on regular, my to-do list today.
Perfect. On a regular post, everything like that. So make sure to check that out. Email us, podonthepath@gmail.com. Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/onthepath, where this month is Die Hard and a bunch of other things now that encompass more than a year. All that for only $5 really helps us out. Check out the Discord and, again, all those other links below. We are here again, Home Alone 1990. So we're going to start off with, as always, guessing the gross, where Lucy attempts to correctly guess the gross amount made by the movie. So 1990, budget of $18 million.
Oh, that's quite modest, I think.
I saw another thing on there that said initially it was only supposed to be $10
million. Wow.
Yeah, but they, you know, had to get those big prosthetic hobbit feet for Daniel Stern to step on nails. All right, so $18 million. What do you think this grossed worldwide?
I have no idea how this was received on release. I'm going to guess it probably did well. Let me say like 100 mil.
Unless you maybe grew up with this movie or around, this movie was a revelation.
Like, okay.
And I figured you were going to be under. And you're right. If this movie made $100, it'd be a rousing success.
$100.
Did I say $100?
Yeah. Okay. $100.
If this movie had $100, a rousing success. Although $100 back in 1990.
To see the film. Yeah,
that'd probably be like $8 billion now. This movie grossed $476.7 million. No, this came out in November.
Okay, perfect.
I remember looking up a thing. This movie continued for months at number one, like going into January, going into February, staying at number one, and even just staying in the top 10, I should say, all throughout, even after Christmas. This was a big, big deal.
That's awesome. I love that for them. And they got a couple of sequels at least, didn't
they? Okay, here's the thing. They really only got one sequel, and that was Home Alone 2 Lost in New York. They came out 2 years later. With Macaulay Culkin, Daniel Stern, with all the cast back. Like, all the original cast comes back for that. Home Alone 3 and 4 are a completely different cast. They were straight to DVD or straight to video, whatever you want to call it there. And then they made one 2 years ago called A Home Sweet Home Alone, which I just remember that having dreadful reviews. So it must have been just shit. You know why I think it was shit? Because the kid was a little British kid.
Oh, God, no.
I know. I think it was the kid from Jojo Rabbit, the fat kid with glasses. I probably shouldn't say that. the larger kid with glasses is the guy just going around there.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of the sequels. I keep mistaking it with Richie Rich.
Which is Macaulay Culkin and a big reason why he became like the biggest fucking star, like almost in the world.
And he got his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame recently, right?
Did he?
Very recently, yeah. Him and his wife went and uncovered it.
Oh, what took so long?
Yeah.
Oh, he should have gotten that for The Good Son alone. Or My Girl? God, he's in so many things there. Yeah, yeah, he was a big deal. And all right, so next up we have...
The Tomato Meter. And it's funny, whenever I write my scripts, obviously we share a script sometimes, and its meter is written differently in America and the UK. So really, it's like tomato, meter. But anyway.
Because on the thing that we share, it just says score. Maybe it got
deleted. Yeah, I'm reading on my different one.
Yeah.
Because I have to have a separate one. Otherwise, you'll get
spoilers. Y'all put it
right?
M-E-T-R-E?
Yes.
Insane. Mitra?
So it's a tomato, Mitra. Tomato, meter. So
that's Mitra.
Mitra. So we have two scores to guess. And the first one is a critic's review.
As I remember, Siskel and Ebert, my boys of the critics, did not like this movie. And I think Roger Ebert fucking hated it. So I can So I can see where this is a movie where the critics did not really care for it because it's dumb. Maybe some, I think, do kind of liked it because of Macaulay Culkin and especially because of Daniel Stern and Joe Pesci, who delivered all fucking time comedic performance. I'm going to say this is somewhere around 50% But I do think those performances are going to boost it slightly up.
Okay.
55%.
Nice. Okay. So I'll read you the critics' consensus, which is Home Alone's uneven but frequently funny premise, stretched unreasonably thin, is buoyed by Macaulay Culkin's cute performance and strong supporting stars. And they scored it at 65%.
65. I like it. I like it. I actually really like their succinct review right there because it's about pretty spot on.
Yeah, 65. So that's like a generalized one-line thing, which is pretty good. And then you can go and read all the critics' individual reviews as well.
Good. I'll take that. I'll take that.
Okay, so what do you think about the audience score?
As you can see right here.
Is that a white Russian?
It's a white Russian.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
It's Christmas season. It's the white Russian that I make with half and half.
Nice.
I want it creamier. I like that cream. Thick and creamy.
Okay.
I'm gonna let that hang. I'm gonna say this was 100%. Well, not 100%. I was gonna say it's 100% like, not 100% on
perfect
that.
Perfect film.
Perfect film. No, I'm gonna say this is stupid high though, because again, how it was so well received. I'm only debating high 80s or low 90s, and so I'm just gonna go ahead and try to hit it right on there at the 90 spot.
There isn't a consensus from the audience score, but it is 80%.
80. Really? Okay, I thought it'd be higher.
Yeah, I did as well, actually. I thought it would be 90s.
Wow. Yeah, for it being a class, like in just a Red Dead classic, I'm really shocked that is 80.
Mm-hmm. Shame on the Rotten Tomato audience score.
Shame on you dorks voting on the Rotten Tomato. All right, so there we go. Are you ready to get into the nitty gritty of the movie? Directed by the writer of last week's episode, Chris Columbus. He has now moved up to directing again. This may or may not be the last we hear of Chris Columbus in the next
Chris Columbus Christmas podcast.
It's somehow, again, when we get to the final episode we cover, I think we may have actually brought it up in the episode with the special guest there, of being like, wait a minute, why are these fucking Chris Columbus movies? We didn't mean to do that. And again, I know we mentioned it last week, but we also chose to do Lord of the Rings instead of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. It could have been even more.
Could have been a hat trick.
It could have been almost the entire, but that shit Love Actually thrown in there. So yeah, Chris Columbus, who appears to have disappeared. That's kind of a funny thing there. But yeah, he started hitting them out of the park in this. I'll really probably always think of him first and foremost for Mrs. Doubtfire. I was 9 when that came out. Robin Williams was just the biggest person in the world at that time. And just the name, getting into history and all that, was Chris Columbus, Christopher Columbus. His name always stuck out with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever this first came out, I don't know much about Christopher Columbus, like historically, but I always remember seeing this director and like when I was a child, when Harry Potter was coming out, and making a joke like, oh, it's that guy who discovered America.
It's that guy who did it.
Yeah. So the last thing he directed was a 2020 Netflix movie, it looks like.
Oh.
It's a Netflix movie with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn as Santa and Mrs. Santa, I guess. I don't know. Awesome. And then the one he did before that is 100% a Stay Tuned. That is Pixels. We will cover that garbage fucking movie.
Oh, is it bad?
It's Adam Sandler bad.
Oh, like, God.
Adam Sandler not giving a shit bad. Oh, he's got a bunch of Percy Jackson Olympians. I Love You, Beth Cooper. Rent. Oh, my God. Oh, he wrote Christmas with the Cranks. Next. Those two movies will be here. Home Alone 2 and Christmas with the Cranks. We will cover next Christmas.
Next Christmas, we're getting it booked in already.
We will get them booked in because Christmas with the Cranks. Oh, my God. Okay. No, we're not talking about Christmas with the Cranks. We're not doing that. But if you thought the director was a big name, how about this writer? And anybody who pays attention or has paid attention to quintessential movies from the 80s knows the quintessential 80s director, John Hughes.
I know him from Uncle Buck.
Yeah, and this is how Macaulay Culkin got casted, was from that.
And also John Candy shows up a little bit later in the film, who is Uncle Buck.
John Candy, gone from us way too soon.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was looking through his filmography, because I know him from Uncle Buck, pretty much. That's all I know him from. And then Cool Runnings, I think he's in as well.
Cool Runnings.
And Home Alone. And then his filmography stopped at like 1995. And I was like, why hasn't he worked since then? And then
oh, it
was
you, like,
I didn't even know. I was like, what?
Eleven. Yeah, little kid Brett was crestfallen because he never gave a bad performance, and he made every movie funny. Everything that was in there, God, he's so good. I think he was Canadian bacon too. Oh, so good. Oh, but yeah, John Hughes. I'll always think of for. It might not be my favorite 80s movie. It's probably number two. Better Off Dead would be number one. But if I'm going to where all the popular is, The Breakfast Club in 1985 is, to me, it's just the most or the perfect encapsulation of these like 80s movies.
Yeah, I need to watch that one. That's one that's totally missed me as well.
You haven't seen that one?
No.
Okay. I did think, again, peeling behind the curtain here, Inside Baseball. I was thinking like in May, we do like out of school movies. To celebrate getting out of school. And so like Dazed and Confused. You haven't seen that, have you?
Nope.
No. Oh, God. Okay. Dazed and Confused and The Breakfast Club. We will pencil those in as well. So this episode has just turned into what we're going to do.
Scheduling next year ahead.
But yeah, John Hughes did a bunch of stuff in that. Bunch of many 80s like that. Died at 59. Died in 2009. Oh, man. Yeah, but he also wrote Flubber, which really sucks, so maybe good riddance.
Oh my God, I loved Flubber as a child. I loved the Flubber films.
Okay, well, let's pencil Flubber in also. That's when Robin Williams just went off.
It was insane. It was just insanity.
It was so fucking dumb. Like,
yeah. But I can't even remember what happens in it, but I just remember that I loved Flubber.
I remember it involves basketball. So whenever if we ever do a basketball-themed month, we'll add
Base
Flubber.
Base Jam.
We will cover that piece of shit movie too, and I will annoy or piss off everybody my age because I might be the only fucking millennial that's just like, Space Jam is a bad movie. It's okay for like nostalgia. Oh. Like, see, I know you're like, no, it's good, it's good. Okay, we'll watch it. We'll go see.
Okay, we need a basketball month, out of school, Christmas. We've got we've got a quarter of the year done.
I know, we're pretty much already there. What do you need? We don't need to have any more meetings or anything like that.
No.
All right, so I got a couple notes here of the casting, because this is fucking wild, okay? So we already mentioned there about Uncle Buck being why Macaulay Culkin got it. Robert De Niro and John Lovitz turned down the role of Harry, which Joe Pesci then accepted.
Robert De Niro.
Which is funny tying him to Joe Pesci because Goodfellas, Joe Pesci is going to win an Oscar in 91, but for this year because of Goodfellas, in which he was playing like Robert De Niro's best friend, you know, type like that. So Robert De Niro now or 10, 20 years ago, maybe like when he was doing the comedy with like Meet the Parents and all that. But in 1990s, Robert De Niro?
It's not right. No. Not right at all.
No, he'd be
right though. Meet the Parents was great. He's great in that.
I hate that fucking movie. I know we're just really like fighting right here. Ben Stiller is so hit or miss for me, and he's mainly miss. I never understood it. I never liked him. I hated that fucking movie. I hated the premise of that movie. I hate how every joke set up was just this very lame style of miscommunication that can be explained so easily. Oh, I hate that fucking movie.
I think I prefer Meet the Fockers, where you meet his parents as well. I think I preferred that one.
Is that real?
Yes, it's real.
Oh.
There's a sequel.
Oh, that's right. His name was like Harry Focker or something.
His name was Gaylord Focker.
Okay, do I need to cut that for homophobic slur?
I don't know what it's called.
You've been watching too many 80s movies, and now you're calling people Gaylord.
His name, it said it on the patch.
Is it really?
Yes, and they call him gay.
Okay,
that's
well,
like what they use as a nickname.
It says his name is Greg. I just googled it. His name is Greg Focker.
Yes, his name is Greg.
You're messing with me. But
no, I'm not. Look up. I'm not saying it again. His name is gonna get canceled.
His name is Gaylord Greg Focker, a nurse.
Yes,
I don't remember that.
That's okay, his name. Whatever. It wasn't me, just being slandered.
Whatever. Let's not talk, let's just try to limit us talking about movies that I hate and you like. So we'll see. So yeah, I cannot believe that. And then John Lovitz, who I love, would not be remotely menacing enough that Joe Pesci was able to do. And then Frank, the role of Uncle Frank was written for Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, no way.
Again, like what the hell? But Grammer was unavailable, so they gave it to Jerry Bamum.
Yeah, he's not in the film that much.
He's not in it at all. But again, in 1990, this is before Frasier. Like, he was on Cheers, yeah, and he was in that. But this is before he was, I mean, obviously he was on Cheers. I think he was getting nominated for Emmys and all that, but very much a supporting actor at that time. I think Frasier started maybe like 93 or 94 or something like that. Okay. When he became like into the stratosphere.
A big deal, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it became a big deal. So Daniel Stern was cast as Marv initially, but before shooting, he was told production had changed from 6 weeks to 8 weeks, and he was not going to be paid more.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, maybe that's the stuff they fought for now with all these strikes in the years. So he quit, so he dropped out. And then they recast him. They recast a guy named Daniel Roebuck. And I remember this guy's face, but I don't remember too much he was in. Maybe The Fugitive. I think he might have been The Fugitive or something like that. But then after 2 days of rehearsal, Columbus basically fired his ass, and Pesci really brought or pushed for Stern to come back. But it doesn't say if Stern got paid more. I'm assuming he got paid more for coming back. But again, that's one of those. To me, this movie is made by those two. Macaulay Culkin is incredible for a little kid. Absolutely unbelievable. But the movie's made by Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern.
Yeah, those two are just so funny, like comedically, like
physical
comedy, and just, you know, the looks they give each other, the screaming. It's like, it's ridiculous. And it's screaming, so brilliant.
The screaming from Daniel Stern and Macaulay Culkin is, I've heard it so many times in the past couple of days, and I just laugh and smile every time they scream.
Yeah, they're so good. I would imagine if he quit on that basis and then they went crawling back, they must have paid him more.
Yeah, which again, like, Jesus, man, the fact that that even could have happened was just shame.
I know, the absolute cheek of some people, by the way, being like, yeah, we're gonna get 2 more weeks of work out of you, you're gonna have to slip on ice, you know, climb up, you know, run around barefoot in snow, be all sticky and gross and scream, but no more money.
What's weird is they did have stunt doubles for some things, but then a lot of them, I know at least Joe Pesci did himself.
Yeah.
Burning, the head getting burned.
You see their face a lot of the time. So I was like, oh shit, they must have done quite a lot of this themselves.
A lot of the slips, if you look closely, you can tell that ain't them. There's some, again, there's some Slavic dude about 8 inches taller than Joe Pesci. This, oh, brisk, you know, falling in there. The reason I hate the movie Shrek, and when we eventually cover Shrek, I will unload on that, is because that initially was supposed to be Chris Farley. But he died, and it went to Mike Myers. Chris Farley auditioned for the role of the Santa Claus impersonator.
Oh.
That he talks to in the street that gives him the Tic Tacs. Yeah. But he failed to impress Columbus and didn't get it.
Wow.
I know. And again, like, it wouldn't matter. It was a very small thing. But just, again, if we could have seen Chris Farley again.
What is it you like him from?
Saturday Night Live mainly, but the movie Tommy Boy was his main one. He died, I think, age 33 or something like that.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, very much some substance abuse addiction. But he was Jack. He walked so Jack Black could run.
Ah.
If you want to call it that. Like the agile fat guy thing. Like that's Chris Farley's. A massive gut. And this dude's doing like cartwheels like it's nothing.
Yeah, incredible. I find that so. It's so... Yeah, it's like baffling when you see Jack Black doing that kind of stuff. And
Jack Black doing like a double leg kick. And it's just, how does he do that? Because he's not like offensive lineman, athletic fat. Like, he's a fat dude who probably smokes weed all day. And he's just doing these high kicks and raising his leg up there. I'm like, dad, damn, dude.
Jack Black on a red carpet is just, it's just brilliant. Like, one of my favorite videos is Jack Black and Angelina Jolie doing press or like a red carpet event for Kung Fu Panda, and Angelina Jolie is incredibly pregnant and he's just like running around doing, you know, like high kicks, and then there's so many photos of him pushing his belly out and he just looks as pregnant as she does
in solidarity.
It's a really, really funny comment where he's like, obviously Kung Fu Panda, they just do the voice acting, right? It's an animated film. So they were doing a red carpet event in like Singapore or something. And he's like, why are we even here? Like, we're not doing this, like the dubs in this country. Oh. It's different actors. Like, we have no place being here at all.
I guess that's what drives that budget up.
Exactly. Yeah. But he's just, he's brilliant.
All right. So John Candy is the other note on here that we talked about. He was only available for one day and it took 23 hours to shoot. He was paid $414, which I'm assuming is scale back then, because he did the
$414.
I didn't mistake that and say like 414,000. No, he was paid $414 American.
Oh,
since he did the film as a favor to Hughes.
Yes, they're probably friends at this point.
Yes, and then everything he pretty much said, and I've heard this before, him and the scenes, obviously only has the scenes with Catherine O'Hara, all of their stuff was improvised, like all of it was. Yeah, and so he was the one, only one, it says according to Columbus, he was the only one allowed, all his dialogue was improvised. There's a little bit of improvisation, but I guess Hughes was very, very strict about this script, which is weird because they're like, Hughes was strict about the script, and it's just, unless he retained full control, which I don't think he would have, that's a Columbus thing. Like, he's the writer here, and in movies the director is the person that can do pretty much whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, I wonder how that dynamic ended up being like that. Then
he must have just gotten the agreement that he would have say, I guess, over what gets said or whatever, because again,
he
Columbus
very strongly about it.
And Columbus, again, this is what made him into it, the success of this, and then I'm assuming he did Home Alone 2. I honestly didn't look, but then that made that made a bunch of money, made less than this, since why there was only really two of them. And then Mrs. Doubtfire. So Chris Columbus, within about a four-year, five-year span, just had, you know, colossal hit after colossal hit there.
Killing it.
Crushing it, bro. Okay, let's get here with one more bit, and then we'll get to the actual movie. Cinematographer Julio Macatz recalled that Pesci was more difficult to work with than Culkin. The older actor believed some of his dialogue was not of a quality commensurate with his acting ability. Again, he had just done Goodfellas and had just done with Scorsese like the year before this, about 6 months to 9 months before this. Get this, though. And this is what I love to hear about actors, because I always see the shit with like Jack Nicholson. And when Jack Nicholson was acting, he always had it in every single agreement that he did not work during Laker games.
Okay.
And he went to every single Laker game. So if it was in LA and it was like, hey, whatever shooting has to stop by this time, I'm not shooting past it because there's a fucking Laker game. So Joe Pesci resented the early unit calls since they prevented him from starting his day with nine holes of golf as he preferred to do.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And and they get this. Okay. And again, this isn't Joe Pesci, the actor. This isn't, I can't remember his name from Goodfellas. Tommy DiNardo, I think was his name, or whatever it was. Same as the New York Giants quarterback, apparently. After he took the assistant director by the collar one day to complain about this, daily call times were moved back from 7 to 9 a.m. to accommodate his golf rounds.
What on earth? These people are such divas. It's ridiculous.
It's so funny because it's just like, he's from Newark, New Jersey, which is right up there against New York. He's so Italian. And just, yeah, to think like, you know, by this time, he'd really been in the mainstream for 8 years. He broke out really with 80, I think it was 82's Raging Bull, Scorsese, which he got nominated for and didn't win it. He didn't win that one. He's got three Oscar nominations, all gangster movies with Scorsese. Well, Raging Bull wasn't a gangster movie. Sorry, Raging Bull was about boxing. It really wasn't a gangster movie. But literally has three Academy Award nominations, one win. It's all directed by Scorsese. So here's the thing. So now they pushed it back to 9 a.m., right? On the other side of the schedule, the crew had limited time to film the nighttime scenes because Culkin could not work later than 10 p.m. Due to his age. Because
he's just a little baby.
So he couldn't work past 10.
That's so sweet. Bless him.
Oh, child labor laws.
He's so cute, though. I'm so impressed by him in this film. I think he's great.
You can, again, tell why he became like an A-list fucking 8 or 9 year old. And it's I bet he's got some fucking stories. His parents, I think, were a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, he divorced himself from his parents when they tried to control his money and stuff.
Yep. And his brother, Kieran Culkin, is Fuller in this, the bedwetting Pepsi drinker.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think he was on Succession or something like that. So he's even made out a nice little career. Indie movies, though. Nice. Some indie movies he was in, too. Yeah, so he's doing pretty well. All right, so let's get into the actual starting of the movie. This fucking score. Oh, this fucking score. It is John Williams.
Yeah, it is.
How Harry Potter-esque does this opening sound?
Yeah, it's very like whimsical, right?
It's so whimsical that if you would have played this to me, because I haven't watched this movie in a long time, if you'd have played that piece of music, I'd have been like, oh, it's fucking Harry Potter. They're probably at Hogsmeade. It just screams Christmas holiday time.
Yeah, it's very festive. And yeah, whimsical is just the best word I can think to describe it. It's so cute.
Absolutely. All right. So We get started here in this fucking mansion. The only way to describe this is this governor's mansion.
I've never seen anything like it in my life.
So goddamn big. There's a cop at the front just chilling in this house. And I guess you could look up maybe the definition of white privilege. And that is 87 people in a house running around, not giving a shit that a cop is standing in their foyer, just chilling.
Just ignoring him, running past him, not listening to him when he's asking questions. And he's just stood there. And obviously, we later learn he's not a cop. But yeah, you're right. There's just no regard for him being there at all.
No, I get some people may not like cops more than others or whatever. But even if you didn't, wouldn't you be like, what are you doing here?
Why the fuck are you in my house? Yeah, nobody's fazed by it at all.
It takes him so long. This also may be ground zero for the start of kid power movies, where this little kid, everything is wrong about this family from the get-go, okay? This is a fucking therapist wet dream here, because they are all absolute assholes to him. And then he's a shitheel right back.
It is awful. I was, you know, audibly gasping at how horrible some of this family were being to Kevin.
Dude, yeah, just like, and again, I can see
why
he's
useless. You're just the worst. I was like, oh.
Yeah, the guy, we mentioned earlier, calls him a jerk, and it's just, good Lord. And then excellent French from one of the cousins, I think, that you at the French call les incompetents. It's just, So it's very good. Very good French delivery there. Buzz, check out this future felon.
He's such an arsehole. He reminded me of the, you know, like the bad guy on Toy Story. He's like the kid's neighbor, Sid. Or something. He's got, yeah, he reminds me of Sid. He's got the buzz cut and he's just like an arsehole.
Yeah, hence why he's called Buzz. But I did see this. Buzz, Kevin Rattray, I think is his name, Rattray or something. He is in that one that came out 2 years ago, reprising his role as Buzz. I want you to take a wild guess what profession Buzz is.
Okay.
He's an asshole who's mean and is a shithead. What job might that be?
Oh God. I feel like he's a prison guard.
He's a fucking cop. Like just a straight up cop. Because of course he is.
Of course, yeah, that makes sense.
So I just wanted to do this and be like, did he future cop? Yeah, if Joe Pesci would have been, I should say this is Harry right here. Another goofy thing that I didn't know because I never heard his last name. His name is Harry Lime, but it's L-Y-M-E. Harry Lime, L-I-M-E, is Orson Welles' character from the great fucking movie, 1949's The Third Man. And what is with that goofy connection? Because there's nothing in there. He never mentions, I don't think, about being in Vienna or having the best intro scene ever. The intro of Harry fucking Lime. Google that or YouTube that. Everybody listening, if you want to know about cinematography, one cinematography that year, the fucking entrance of Harry Lime in that movie is fucking legendary. It's Orson Welles looking up. Oh my God, the film noir of it. The Third Man is also where I was introduced to the Dutch angle, because they use it.
Okay.
And they use it in good, like actually good reasoning. They don't just throw it on its side and twist it like so many other movies, like fucking Twilight. Oh my God.
Yes. Twilight and Transformers Dark of the Moon. What the fuck? You'd be like, whoa, all of a sudden, what is going on?
At least with Transformers Dark of the Moon, they keep it like stable. Twilight is fucking rotating, going in and out. And I'm like, God damn, they learned about the Dutch angle right then on the morning of, and like, man, I really like this. Let's try it. Not only should we do it, we should just keep turning the fucking angle and angering me. By the time people are listening to this, I may have completed my Twilight journey. Breaking Dawn Part 2.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Will be in the books this Friday. Like, so many people are excited for me to watch this. I'm almost thinking everyone's overselling it.
Maybe you'll end up disappointed. But
how could I not be, though? You know?
Yeah, I think you probably will be underwhelmed. But
well, you will know.
Yeah, you have to go in thinking this was built up over like 4 or 5 years for some people.
Yes,
and for more, for book readers, it was built up for even longer. Yeah. And it was such a flip that everybody was flabbergasted, screaming, crying, throwing up in the cinemas. Like, it was wild. Yes, so that's the difference. It's going to be a very different experience for you.
Yes, I've heard certain people just howling in the aisles and screaming. Like, so yes,
Oh my God, I remember it so clearly.
Yes, so yeah, my girlfriend will be recording my reaction. So
I'm so excited.
We might as well put that on. Assuming it's what it is. I don't know what my reaction is going to be, but yeah, maybe we'll put that on the socials to see the reaction
on Instagram
to the end of the Twilight series. All right, so up in the room, fucking Buzz. They're up in Buzz's room. Old man Marley, this motherfucker is just trying to shovel some snow, and these asshole kids are just pushing this urban legend.
It's so mean, and he just, yeah, you're right. He's just like, obviously, you know, lives by himself, and everyone on the street's like, yeah, he's a murderer. He kills people and buries them in his yard, and he's just trying to keep his street clean.
God, what an absolute fucking... But again, that's just another thing. Like, urban legends should be going away with the internet. Unfortunately, now they're just political conspiracy theories, and it's just absolute fucking nonsense. But yeah, something like that's just... Especially a local one.
Yeah. Yeah, it would just change. You know, he probably wouldn't have any neighbors that like want to hang out with him because so many people just believe this crazy myth.
Well, one of those people might be a son who doesn't want to hang out with him either. But we'll get back to that. The pizza delivery guy comes in, Little Nero's Pizza. So there's a Little Caesars here in the U.S., but they're not known for delivery. I actually don't think they deliver. The whole point is this cheap pizza you go pick up. So Little Nero's Pizza. This, a lot of things back in the day blow my mind. Like the groceries that Kevin's going to get for under $20 later. I had a fucking conniption in there. Yeah. Just wanted to jump off a cliff. This is deliver in 20 minutes or don't pay. I have only ever seen it at 30 minutes.
We don't have anything like that here.
Really? See, I guess.
Yeah, no, there's no offers like that.
Nobody does.
If you deliver food, it's over an hour at least.
God damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any sort of takeaways. That's why I just go collect things. It's way quicker.
Yeah. Pretty much is that way. I can see that. But yeah, it was always 30 minutes. Those are gone. I know he does those anymore. Mainly because, like you said, it's just one, it's just
impossible
not safe.
Well,
it's just not, it's just not safe because you've got fucking 16-year-old pizza boys driving like bats out of hell. Yeah. Or that pizza's going to come out of their paycheck. And you have assholes being like, oh, 31 minutes. It said dur, dur, dur. So. Mm-hmm. But I could not believe 20 minutes or don't pay. And of course, he's just chilling in there with the cop because no one's paying attention to these jokers out there again in the foyer. She wants everyone, hope you're drinking all the milk. And man, is there nothing better than just a big glass of milk like in the middle of the night?
Well, no, I think that's weird.
When do you drink? What? When do you drink like milk?
I never drink milk.
Like, you never
No.
You never have like a glass of milk ever?
No, never. I don't drink normal milk anyway, but sometimes I'll be at work and our office like provides us with milk and tea and, you know, coffee supplies and everything. Like, and sometimes I'll go into the office and I'll see someone at lunchtime just drinking a big pint glass of milk. And I just think that's fucking weird.
Yeah, I just take it out of like the quart. I'll just get like a quart of milk.
No.
With pizza?
In my tea. No, why would I have a glass of milk with pizza? Are you joking?
What they were eating here.
I know that's what they're eating, but that's not what you drink, is it?
No, okay. No, I was joking about the milk. Okay. No. I was joking about the milk with pizza. I've explained this before. I don't do it anymore, but I used to in the middle of the night wake up and just be so fucking thirsty. And I would just collapse my way into the kitchen and into the refrigerator, and I would just chug milk or orange juice.
Oh, I love orange juice.
But chugging orange juice on an empty stomach at 2 and 3 in the morning is when I first experienced heartburn.
Oh,
and I would literally feel it just come up. So then I just started chugging milk, and man, just you can just feel it like coating your stomach and just kind of getting everywhere. You know what? I'm going to have some milk tonight. I really do
It already looks like you're drinking a glass of milk, to be fair.
Because my white shirt?
No, because of your white Russian.
Oh, the white Russian. I was like, wait, what? I was like, because of my white shirt? You're right. Ah, you're right, though. But I put half and half in. I was so confused. Drinking milk, I'm like, what did I just do? I haven't moved there. No, the white Russian. There you go. No, I love milk, and I will not apologize. Oh, my God, the whole milk. God. Okay. Anyway, now I know what I'm getting right after the recording. Yeah, so Kevin attacks Buzz, who, the way Buzz eats this pizza, shoving it with his fingers, like, sideways, like, what the fuck?
I know, it's so abnormal. I didn't know that down as well. I was like, what the fuck is this guy doing?
I mean, I know he's trolling, but just, like, that is, it's so disgusting looking.
Is Buzz the one that tells him, Kevin, you're such a disease?
No, I think
that was the other guy.
I think that was the redheaded kid who might have been a kid from the show Pete and Pete.
Oh,
I didn't look it up. I think he was from Pete and Pete. One of the girls would eventually go on the Mighty Ducks.
All right.
Was it a girl? No, Averman. I thought Averman was a boy. And then one other girl ended up being in Olympic judo, competing for the U.S. Wow. in judo in the 96 and 2000 Olympics.
So everyone's done well then.
Yeah, except, no, we already said that. Damn. I was going to say except Fuller. I was going to say Fuller died in a fiery crash, but that's Kieran Culkin, so obviously. He didn't die in a crash. Like,
oh,
I was joking. Shit, I could have pulled it off then. Damn it. Oh, well. Next time I'll just go for it and be like, oh, well, couldn't get it. Yeah, so Kevin attacks Buzz and knocks milk all over the passports. And gross. It's a good shot, too, because while they're cleaning it up, you can see the dad throw his ticket in the trash.
Really?
You make that out? Yeah, he grabs, like, the napkins, and he throws it, and you can see, like, the top quarter of the ticket in the trash.
So how did they get on the plane?
Well, he didn't get on the plane.
Oh,
it's Kevin's ticket.
Kevin's
ticket.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So
okay,
when they get them all to pass out. Speaking of how they get on the plane, I know how they got on the fucking plane. Because it's 1990 in this pre-9/11 bliss where they, first off, they somehow make the fucking flight
impossible.
In 45 minutes. By the way, if you look up where they live like 20 miles north of Chicago. Yeah, this is not fucking Chicago here. This is some fucking, I don't know, Highland Park or not. Evanston's, I think, is more like Southeast. This is a bougie ass Chicago, like, not Chicago, my ass. So they just get up to the gate and they're like, yeah, pick a seat anywhere in coach, blah, blah, blah. Like, American? There's no way this is what it was in 1990. I refuse to believe that.
I couldn't believe. I thought this is the most unbelievable part of the film, this here, where they're just running through the airport. There's no security, no taking your shoes off, no taking your belts off, no bag scan.
Well, that wasn't
Everyone
back
just
then.
Piles on to the plane. And
no, they.
Just,
but that insane. Wasn't back then.
Yeah.
Like, it really wasn't. Like, there was. That's a TSA thing. That's a post 9/11 thing. I remember before, like in the 90s, going straight up to the gate to say goodbye or to meet family. Like, you go all the way to the gate, and so with something like this, I can see where. You could make it. I know. Imagine that, y'all. Imagine a fucking world where you don't have to show up to a goddamn airport 2 to 3 hours before your fucking flight.
Yeah. Imagine it was just like a train station where you just arrive and hop on.
Oh, my God. Oh. Once I found out that they didn't even say the train, like whatever station, whatever line number it was going to be.
Platform
until like 20 or some odd minutes. I was like, this is fucking incredible. Because like you said, you can just show up 30 minutes before. Grab a coffee or grab something like that. Make sure you go to the bathroom or do whatever. And then you get on your train and that fucking train leaves. If it's leaving at 10, it is leaving at 10. I got so spoiled by y'all's trains.
I know. When they're good, they're good.
They were all good.
I'll say that.
They were okay. The French trains were a lot smoother and quieter.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, they were. And not like the tube. I mean, like the ones that I took up to Manchester. Yeah.
Yeah.
The ones took to Manchester and then the Newcastle, like the one we took to Edinburgh. Like they were fine. But the French.
Oh, they were like the older ones. Okay. If you took the one from Newcastle to London, that's really nice.
That one, I was in first class and I had that colic little British boy behind me annoying the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah. That's a shame.
It really was. That little fucker. God. all right, so this we got it. Look what you did, you little jerk. And it's like, this fucking old Uncle Frank.
I know.
Okay. Let's talk about Uncle Frank for a second, all right? He's a cheap ass. He's a fucking asshole. He says, when Kevin goes to complain to the mom, Kate, that Uncle Frank is not letting him watch the movie, and the mom is like, look, if Uncle Frank says no, then it must be bad. What in God's name is Uncle Frank watching with the family of like a dozen kids there that is so bad that the mom is like, oh shit, that must be really bad.
Yeah, I was confused by this because I think it's made out as if all the other kids are watching it, but it's just Kevin that isn't allowed to watch it. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, whatever Uncle Frank is into is sounds weird.
Skeevy. And then he wants to steal the silverware from First Class.
Embarrassing.
Yeah. And then the champagne, fill it up. Yep. Oh,
it's like this. It's free, right? It's free, right?
God. This dude. All right. So yeah, and again, I have back down on here. Why is this cop just allowed to stay at the front of the house? he's just chilling. And then finds out what it is. And we get that I don't want to see any of you again for the rest of my life. I hope I never see any of you jerks again. And then he calls his mom a dummy. And this is where you can't blame the kid, because if he's being raised in this horrible household, he's going to be a horrible, little piece of shit. But at this point, it's just this kid is a little bit too much right now.
I feel really awful for him because everyone is mean to him. It's not like usually there's like one friend among the family and they'll come and console you, but he just has nobody. So I kind of understand why he's being a dickhead back to them.
Yeah, but when he calls his mom dummy, I like jump back like, oh dude,
that's a bit much, isn't it?
Also, I wonder how much of the dad, his name's like Kevin Dunn. That's another actor. Fuck, I just lost track of what his name is. R.I.P. though. John Hurt.
Yeah.
John Hurd, right?
Hurd. Yeah.
Hurd. Yeah, not John Hurt. Yeah, John Hurt. Nope. Yeah, he just died like a few years ago, I think.
That's sad.
Yeah, he is barely in the movie. He really doesn't do much. This is very much, I would almost think this is almost like a stepdad situation where it's like, oh, you're a fucking kid, you handle all that. I do love.
He doesn't seem that bothered at all. The mom's like losing her mind.
Yeah.
And the dad's like, oh, we'll just stay in France. Like, what the fuck?
The dad's like, look, we'll go over there, we'll do it in that. But even here, where it's just like, Kevin, go to your room. Like, he has to have the last say to do it, which again, with a lot of dads would be. But I do like that this is pretty much about the mom and him. And we really like, she's a star. And again, I don't want to discredit Catherine O'Hara at all, because even though I said the other ones made the movie, they made that part of the movie. But this other part between the mom and the son relationship, it is made by her, that she's incredible. You really feel for it. She doesn't go too far over the top. And I meant to say earlier that Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern, apparently, if you believe the Tribune trivia or whatever, everything like that, is that they went over the top on purpose, thinking this wasn't going to be a big movie. They're like, this movie's a joke. Okay. This movie's a joke. Let's just go crazy with it and really ham it up. And she's not doing it. If she would have done that, the heart would not have been there. Like, she feels believable that she fucking left her youngest kid at home on a transatlantic flight.
Yeah, because I initially was like, this is so fucking dumb. Like, they're the worst, leaving him behind. But then amongst the chaos of it all, and as soon as she realizes, she has this, mother's instinct that something's not right. She's forgotten something. And then as soon as she clicks, my heart broke for her. I was like, oh, she genuinely just feels awful.
It's like, I'm a bad mother. I'm a terrible, terrible mother. Yeah, so I do like the setup. And I do think it is actually pretty believable how they would leave him behind. And it wasn't
because their electricity goes out overnight, right? And because nobody has phones, all the alarms don't go off. So they all sleep in and it's chaos from there. And I thought that is so, you don't think about that. Like if this film came out now, it would be like, that's so dumb. You know, your phone battery wouldn't die.
Yeah. Anybody that says like they're late for something, I'm like, you can set like 87 alarms.
Yeah.
if your phone dies, why didn't you put it on the charger? Like, yeah, there's no excuse for that. But it's just wild to think about. Yeah, before smartphones, before all that, you were at the mercy of electricity. And then that's why you would do the wake up, the call service.
Yes.
And like, I remember doing that in hotels even up to 10 years ago or so, and just getting in like with the college coaching. I would get a wake-up call for every one of our rooms, for the players and everybody, because I'm like, we're not trusting them. We have the managers go knock on the players, but it's like every single room will get a call at that time to say, like, there's no excuse why you weren't up.
Yeah, no, that was probably a wise move.
Yeah, so one thing they get there in this Benny Hill, everything sped up, bam, like that. This driver down there, take him to the airport, The first one he talks to, everyone's pretty Chicago here, okay? Mm-hmm, but the second one with this little shithead kid in there asking, yeah, automatic transmissions, yeah, blah, blah, blah. This driver was pulled out of a Wrigley Field dumpster with this just stupefying Chicago accent. It's like, I told you before, kid, don't bother me. Now beat it. And it's just this insane, like, this accent is so ridiculous.
Yeah, I noticed that as well, because it stood out amongst the rest of them. And then that little kid, he was so annoying.
The kid just, oh, what a little.
Oh, my God.
I mean, all kids are annoying.
Yeeted out of the van. Well, yeah. But I can't believe he didn't get yeeted out of the van sooner.
Well, this both of them are just like, hey, beat it. Don't bother me.
Go away.
But they both, the other guy was told him, did he say hit the road or something like that?
Yes. He told him, hit the road, kid.
I don't know, kid. Hit the road. but yeah, so they mistake him when they're doing the head count. I'm like, okay, that's pretty good too.
That makes sense. Yeah.
One of them does it in there. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, they leave the house 45 minutes before, but okay. Single seats and coach. Yeah, my ass. The first class seats are wider than my bed.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous, this plane.
It's so wide. But again, first class in 1990, everything is getting smaller.
Oh my God. Yeah. Some of the flights I got this weekend, the space was unreal. Like, God, ridiculously small.
Sucks. It just it's something that should be so magical still and should be fun, but it's just tolerated to get to where you want to be.
I just couldn't get comfortable my whole flight back from Amsterdam to Newcastle. Like, and it's only an hour and 45 minutes, so it's not that big of a deal. But still, when you're just exhausted and like stressed, and you just want to be comfortable, and it's impossible. And then the person in front of you leans back and it's like, oh, great, now you're like 3 inches from my face.
The person in front of me did give me a heads up, so I did appreciate that. But on an hour and a half flight, you should not be inclining your fucking seat. I don't give a shit.
No, but it's not. You're not sleeping.
But tell me more about that hour and 45 minute tough flight as I think about my 11 hour flight with two kids right behind me.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. No. They slept most of the time. But man, when they were awake, they wanted fucking Mars to hear about it.
They're insane sometimes, the children on flights. I can't. I'm just like, can't you just
sit down? Yeah, but it depends also. Like, to me, kids are going to be fucking kids. I do judge the parents, though. And so on the flight,
it's kind of hard not to, isn't it?
Well, because on the flight up there, there was this little girl that was just screaming. But God bless those parents. They were trying. They were doing everything they could. They would get up. They'd move around. I mean, bless them. I felt so bad for them. But like, to me, it's just like, okay, they're trying to do something. I can't get mad at that.
I totally get that. Yeah, my heart would go out for them in that moment. Completely.
Oh my God! Yeah.
You know, I can't imagine how stressful a situation that must be. And I bet there's some real arsehole passengers that would, you know, make comments or have looks and stuff as well. And I just think it must be horrible.
Oh no, that's terrible. So that is the number one reason why I'm never going to have kids is I might have to put them on a plane and when I get there. This furnace, you want to talk about whimsical or magical?
Yeah, what the fuck was this?
Here's the thing, though. I looked at it, I'm like, oh, this is magic. Oh, what is going on here? But I like it because this movie is shot from the point of view of this 8-year-old boy.
True,
who would imagine that this fucking furnace, and I think this thing is telling him to bring the One Ring to Mordor, because I got big fucking Sauron vibes here. It's a voice, you can hear it. I'm like, did Peter Jackson watch this and think, hey, wow, I like that. We got the fire. We got the eye, the talking over, like menacing like that in tongues. Okay, perfect. We're set.
I did quite like it. Later on when he says, oh, I really find the basement of my house scary. It's like really spooky down there. It's like, okay, so we're just kind of seeing what he sees. Because I didn't know if this film was going to have some kind of like fantastical element to it then. But it's just his imagination, I guess.
It kind of does, because he wished for his parents to go away or not to have a family. And then all of a sudden we hear the whimsical music and it shows the moon. And then a tree breaks or whatever and takes it out. So I'm like, damn, did he just do a fucking like wish or
is
something?
Is it the Christmas magic? Is it?
It must be. He goes and looks around the house. And this is a big thing of note also. Buzz's girlfriend that he looks at and goes, woof. Did you look up the trivia on this?
No, but that. I was shocked.
Okay, so you don't know what happened to that girl?
No.
Are you messing with me?
No, I'm not messing with you.
Okay, so that girl, the girl that they used here, had a ton of issues with being made fun of and eventually, like, committed suicide.
Oh, no.
Guess what? I'm joking. God, I couldn't help
myself. It's not a nice joke.
I couldn't help myself. Yeah, but it's my sociopathic tendencies. I'm trying out my acting skills.
Oh, well, you're very good.
Thank you.
And I'm devastated and heartbroken.
You know, I've always wanted to be a sociopath.
Woof.
No, this was a boy. This was the art director or the set director's son that they dressed up as a girl because Chris Columbus thought it would be too mean.
Okay, I feel better now.
You do, but they still made like a 10-year-old boy dress up as a girl and get called fat and ugly. Like, is it better?
Oh my god,
that's better. It's 100% better.
I think it is better. Yeah,
dude, I always think of that, even when it's adults, like in movies where they're cast as like the ugly or the fat person. It's just
I don't know how mentally you can put yourself through that.
I'm like, yeah. I guess that's. You know, that's acting and they've got a job and they do all that. But God, that just seems so cruel.
Yeah. Imagine you're like, oh, you're the ugly friend. You'd be like, okay, brilliant. Thanks for casting me.
Yeah. All right. So he also puts on the movie Angels with Filthy Souls, which I 1,000,000% thought this was a real movie when I was a kid.
Oh, is it not?
No, it's not. It was made for this movie.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. There was I think there was an old movie from the 30s or might have been the 40s called Angels with Dirty Faces. And it was very much a crime film noir. And they shot it like this. They shot it on the old film right there. But man, this is where Kev turns the light on. You know, it's like, okay, well, he's the movie's over, right? Oh, they could burgle somewhere else. And hey, he's fine. He hangs out for like 3 days. The only thing is, they're shooting him up on the ground. Like he's shooting this screaming, laughing and showing like the body on the ground with like bullet holes and like getting shot. And it's just goddamn 90s PG.
Yes. Yeah. Is this in the film that Kevin's watching?
Yes. And they I remember this like messing with me as a kid because it's one thing to like show the guy like getting shot and go down. And then they show Kevin like scared. They cut back to the guy getting shot, and yes, his body's like on a fucking waterbed from the bullets.
I don't think I saw this bit.
Jesus.
I watched this film on Disney Plus.
Oh,
maybe they cut that out because I don't remember this.
It is definitely on Stars here in America.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I'll have to go back and double check that.
Hey, that does not need to be in
a PG
movie.
No, there's no need. No need at all. You can just see Kevin's reaction and that's all.
Yes, you can hear the gun bullets, you know, like we can pretend it's a gunshot. If kids don't know, they can either figure it out themselves or have their Uncle Frank tell them.
Yeah.
Or their version of an Uncle Frank. So, yeah, so Harry and Marv scope out the joint and that's where Harry scares them, turning the light on and they leave. And yeah, that's fine. Absolutely fucking hilarious because I think it's the first time that I think we really get a good Kevin scream. He goes out there and yells, "I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid." And he does a great job of just looking up and it's old man Marley. And that scream is just awesome.
He's so good at it. And I wonder how, bless him, how many times he had to do it. And then, you know, when he puts aftershave on, he screams and like, it's just so funny.
Yeah. And this also, I should say, I didn't really realize until a multiple watch thing, they repeat like several jokes. 2 and 3 times.
Do they?
They repeat the aftershave twice, the screaming.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
They repeat the shooting scene 3 times because he watches it himself. He does it to the pizza guy and then he does it later to Marv when he goes up there. So they do that shit 3 times.
Yeah. I guess they're just getting their money's worth on those. On
fucking those Columbus. Jokes. Your script didn't need to be. Hughes. Fucking Hughes. Tighten that script up. Script up. Skirt up. Yeah. This is only 1 hour 40-something minutes and. While it was good, I do agree with that Rotten Tomatoes thing where it is stretched thin.
Yeah.
And this is something easy. Dude, knock this motherfucker down to 90 minutes and it becomes it becomes perfect, I'd say.
I did feel like sometimes I was like, do we need this? Like the whole thing of him shoplifting and getting chased through the ice. I was like, what is the point of this bit? Do we need it? Not really.
Yeah, because it didn't like, he didn't have like a heel turn where he's like, I'm a criminal. This is fucking awesome. I'm going to go join these cat. You know what I mean? Like he didn't become a burglar or a thief.
There was nothing. It doesn't change like the outcome of the story at all.
No, you know, that was, that really wasn't needed. But we do get the hilarious. This is the ADA. Shut the fuck up, kid.
Oh, yeah.
The American Dental Association. I'd be like, dude, it's a fucking toothbrush. Where are your parents? I'm calling the CPS. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
All right. So the parents call about Kevin. They call from France about Kevin. Here you go. It's an 80s and 90s movie. What are the police eating? What are these cops eating?
Do they have donuts?
Yes, of course. They're just chomping down.
I didn't see them.
Officer Balsack, the one who got caught on his phone. The piece got caught on his phone.
Oh, how did I miss that?
Did you watch this movie?
I did watch it, but to be honest, I actually fell asleep. So I had to pause it.
Like,
yes. No, honestly, I'm exhausted. This Poland trip has fucked me up. Something serious. I had about 45 minutes into the film, I fell asleep for 45 minutes. So I woke up when the film was over. So I put it all the way back to like 30 minutes in and watched it all over again. So I'm a bit lost at some point.
All right. So maybe the next three or four notes I have, I'll talk about. myself. But yeah, the cops are eating it. He has like three of them stacked up on the table next to him. Not
Amazing.
Even in a box. It's incredible, like, just to remember that, yeah, her cop donut.
That was a big joke. Yeah, yeah.
Every
film.
Con Air. You remember in Con Air when they land the plane and the cops take off what gets dropped right in front of the screen? A fucking donut.
Yeah.
And that was 97.
Constant joke like throughout the 80s and 90s.
Popping donut. And then we talked about with Die Hard on that one that he's not, it's not donuts, it's Twinkies and all these other like Hostess cakes.
Yeah.
They didn't just go donuts. All right. So the cop goes to check on him and does jack shit.
This is disgraceful police work.
They do not like the cops in here. There, I guess John Hughes and Chris Columbus, big ACAB guy.
Yeah, and he just goes, "Yeah, tell him to count their kids again. There's nobody here." And it's like, dude, what do you think the kid was gonna do? Like,
yeah, but this guy might have come out of a Comiskey Park dumpster. Tell him to count their kids again. But yeah, and then while the wet bandits, as they say, are ransacking another house, they overhear that the McAllisters are indeed out of town. What the fuck are they doing burglarizing this house in the middle of the day?
Yeah, they just give zero shits. It seems like the whole street is empty apart from Kevin and the old man Marley.
And they're not even pulled up like the garages in the back or something. They're right there for the main road that people can look and see a van and be like, oh, I didn't know so-and-so, because they're obviously not there. This seems really stupid.
Yeah, and it's funny because later on in the film, they make a point of coming back to Kevin's house at 9 p.m. because it's going to be dark.
Yes, and earlier, earlier when they got scared away, or maybe, is that the first time they got scared? Yeah, that's the first time they got scared away with the light. They were like, hey, let's get out of here before someone sees us. Let's beat it before someone sees us. And it was at night. And it's like, what about that fucking house in the middle of the day earlier? Oh, no, it's later here, because they hear this now and they come back, and that's what scares them. Yeah, that's what it was.
It's just, this is maybe their first day on the job and they learn their lesson.
Yeah. And so here we get to the shoplifting thing, his cheap ass Colgate thing. And the old man comes in, and while I just defended him, he just he slams his hand down on the counter. It's cut and horribly bandaged it up, like, bro.
Yeah.
You wrap like some fucking sturdy tissues against that. And just stares at Kevin. It's like, dude, okay, I can't defend you now. Stop scaring people.
Yeah, like, you're not making it any easier for yourself by... Eventually, when he comes up and speaks to him later, he's like warm and really kind. And it's like, why didn't you lead with this instead of the creepy stares?
And he knows people are spreading that rumor.
Yeah.
Like, dude, come on. So he scares Kevin off, who runs away with that toothbrush. Little Jimmy Olsen goes after him right outside. This cop is in the middle of, I don't know, writing a ticket or serving a fucking warrant, but then stops what he's doing in the middle to chase this 8-year-old kid with not a bag or anything like that. It's just, okay, a little, excessive Chicago policing right here.
Is that right? Okay.
Well, it's a big city police force. Like, they're not known for a deft hand.
Yeah, and he just drops everything and goes after this shoplift.
To their credit, he didn't drop a donut and run away.
Yeah. I imagine he was not eating donuts. Oh,
dude, how awesome would that have been? Like, he has, you know, the pen and pad in his hand, and when he turns around, just a donut in his mouth. Because he just had to have one.
Oh, silly.
Oh, man. Okay. This was something cool that I didn't know about till I looked up, but once you see it, you'll be able to see it clearly. When Kevin is almost ran over by Marv and Harry, that is in reverse.
Oh, I thought that was really weird.
Was it the way he walked? The way that Ride is.
The way he walked, and then it's the way his face was just like, and I thought, oh, that's, you know, that's something not quite right. About it. Yeah, something's not right, but that makes perfect sense.
You can really tell when it's from the shot straight towards the van. And the van is coming in right as Kevin's coming in from the left. You can tell that he's walking backwards, like he's walking almost duck-like. And then as he yells, it just looks funny. And it's because it was reversed. What a great way to get that shot, though. I never noticed that, or would have noticed, I don't think, if it was told.
No, I wouldn't have noticed. It definitely jumped out something at me registered today when, like, I watched it. I was like, there was something not quite right about that. But I just can imagine little Macaulay Culkin. I imagine how excited he must have been to work on this film, and I bet he thought that was dead clever.
He never interacted with Joe Pesci because Joe Pesci you saw that? That Joe Pesci didn't want it to be cordial, wanted him to be scared. I'm like, damn, okay.
That's mean.
Yeah, I do think they did end up. Another thing also I saw in there is when he bites his finger later, he actually bit his fucking finger. Macaulay Culkin had a scar.
Oh. Like,
Joe. You ain't on the fucking set of Goodfellas, okay? You're going to get Oscar nominated for that. You're not going to get fucking nominated for Home
Alone.
Don't
bite children's fingers off.
Don't need to bite children's fingers off. I also saw that Macaulay Culkin still calls Catherine O'Hara mom.
Oh, yeah. She was at his star unveiling.
Was she? Aww.
Yeah. Bless her. She looks so great.
That's awesome. She's the one from Schitt's Creek, right?
Yes. I have never watched that show, but I do recognize her from it.
I've seen all the GIFs, though. Every GIF of that show. I feel like
it's
I've seen at least
memeable,
seven episodes.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. But yeah, good for her having this, like, second coming up, if you will. Oh, I forgot to mention that earlier. I guess we'll get there. We'll get there with her and John Candy, their history. And so, yeah. So pure cartoon moment here as the Wet Bandits start to kind of tail Kevin. Right in the middle of the road, Kevin turns around and they hit the brakes and start whistling and looking to the side like they're little fucking cartoon wolves.
Like,
I don't know if that's getting picked up or not, but
I couldn't hear you whistling.
Little gate. My whistling wasn't high enough. So it's just very fucking funny there. And all right, 45 minutes in, here comes that first little bit of attack on there. Kevin sets up this whole fucking little shindig, makes it look like a party. This is engineer. Get this motherfucker to MIT yesterday.
Oh my goodness. He's a genius.
An absolute genius.
Close all the curtains, make shadows, make it look like a party. I was like, oh my God, this kid's amazing.
He's got Michael Jordan on the train.
Yeah.
Right before Jordan would win all, 90? No, he won 94, 95, 91, 92. It'd be actually the next year. I think this might be the season that Jordan won the first of the three, and then took 2 years off for gambling. Won't be convinced otherwise. And then won three, and then retired, and then came back 3 years later with the Wizards, and blah, 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 blah. And then became a terrible owner. And then just recently sold the Hornets. All right. The history of Michael Jordan of the past 30 years right there. Where the fuck did he get these mannequins?
I don't know.
I know where. I know where.
The attic.
These are Uncle Frank's mannequins.
Mm.
Or these are Buzz's things he wants to turn into sex toys.
Oh, God.
Nobody has mannequins for a good reason.
I was hoping there would be some kind of innocent reason for it.
Nobody has mannequins for a good reason.
Maybe some of the people in the family like fashion.
Remember Blade Runner?
Vaguely.
Didn't that guy have all those robots?
Not mannequins, though. They're robots.
Yeah, but those are just better sex toys. Or sex robots. They're just sex robots. That mannequin. If I went to someone's house, especially if it was a guy, and he had mannequins, I'd be like, he dresses those mannequins up, and I don't want to be here anymore, because he might use my skin or somebody's skin.
On the mannequin?
If maybe he likes guys' faces but women's bodies, and I might be his mannequin sex toy.
You might be the perfect choice.
Nope, but I have a new band name now. Mannequin sex toy.
Oh my God, perfect. You'd be like an indie sensation in the UK, yeah.
Except I would rather... All right, I just censored myself. Okay. I would rather be an indie rock musician or even listen to indie rock music. We're going to go back. God, the Twilight soundtrack. Oh, my God.
Oh, so good.
No. God, no. No. Except Supermassive Black Hole and a Baseball Thunderstorm is the only
Paramore Decode.
Oh, yes, of course. That was the first movie, too, right?
Yeah, I think so.
God, the first Twilight is so much better than any of the other ones. Oh, my God. It's actually watchable.
I can't.
It's terrible. but it's watchable.
I can't believe Breaking Dawn Part 1, there's so much happens.
So much happens insane. In the last hour. The first hour is a fucking wedding and honeymoon. I don't... Okay, we'll cover all those movies in time, and I'll get my rants out. In time, we will cover those next four. That'll be perfect for a month in there.
Oh, Twilight Month.
The Twilight Month. All right, Mars says we got to get out of here for someone sees us, and that's what I bring up there about that daylight heist you pulled like fucking 5 hours earlier. Like, why are you worried about people drinking? No, not the other one. But they're back in Paris, and one of the cousins who couldn't, you know, who couldn't possibly remember who it was, is asking Buzz, like, hey, aren't you worried about Kevin? Buzz says he acted up too much, and this time it caught him in the butt.
Like, yeah, weird.
It caught him in the butt?
I'm sure I read somewhere that it originally said caught him in the ass.
No way.
I think so, and it got censored.
Because they say ass a couple times.
Do they? Oh, maybe Buzz, that's a
Buzz
time.
Earlier says, I wouldn't let you stay in my room if you're growing on my ass.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then Kevin later on calls the two horses asses. He goes, you two horses asses. So yeah, they say that a couple times. I think I saw, oh, I forgot to see it again, that when Daniel Stern dropped his shoe through the little doggy door, I think he said shit, but I don't.
Oh,
they might have edited that. I don't remember if it was back in. I meant to go check that up. So I might have to do that later. I won't do that later. Oh, did you hear where the flight is going? So this
I did.
Is where?
Well, she goes via. Well, she went via Dallas, right?
There you go. As she's gonna actually start to barter with this couple and this woman that at Dallas Fort Worth. I was like, hey, yay! Takes a swim through Dallas. Kate is bargaining with this woman like she's trying to escape Nazi-occupied France here.
Just it's actually really awkward. Really, really uncomfortable.
It really was. Is a watch, earrings, $500 cash, 1990. I guarantee you that's probably like $1,500 to like a couple thousand now, probably.
Yeah, and her husband's like, no, come on, we have to leave. And this poor woman's like, come on, the earrings and the money and the watch. Like,
and he's like, you got dangly ones. But she, Catherine O'Hara decides, hey, someone needs to act in this fucking movie. It's going to be me. And she's like, as a mother in there. And she gets on the plane. Now,
makes it.
You know what? I forgot to check. Was she still wearing those earrings later?
Oh, good
fuck,
question.
I should have looked.
That
they
would
don't...
be good trivia. Yeah.
God, that would be awesome if that old woman would still like just took them. She's like, all right.
I need them. Yeah.
throw in that fake Rolex, that Folex. All right. This is where I again had that conniption. Wait, what did I say I had a conniption at earlier? I think this was it.
I can't remember.
I think this was it. Even not, I had my second conniption and caused me to jump through a plate glass window. Look at all the fucking groceries he got for under $20. And I'm just like, God damn it.
Yes, it's quite a stark reminder of where we're at now.
Dude,
30
it is,
years later.
Yeah, to get you can get a generic loaf of bread here for like $2. Like you really can. But that's the off brand, is not remotely health con anything like that. But outside of like the Albertsons local brands, a gallon of milk, a loaf of bread, a thing of peanut butter, a thing of jelly, and a thing of some lunch meat. I don't know. I don't think you could get that for under $20.
And he got the washing up.
No,
liquid.
No. I'm just bringing up right now what I could go to the store right now and not get for $20. I'm not including what he got. That's what I'm saying. Like,
oh, I see.
That little bit amount I'm saying right now you can get for $20. This motherfucker just got groceries for the next like week.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think I usually go to the shop like once or twice a week and I spend about 25 to 30 pounds most times. But I don't buy that much. So I can't, but that seems really unrealistic. Well, obviously it was realistic at the time, but not now.
Yeah, not at all. Yeah, I have to go a couple times in that. And I've just gone, there's stuff I used to buy I don't buy anymore. And then I'll go for the generic brands. And like, there's certain things that I just can't pay more.
Oh my God. Yeah. When I was at uni, I used to buy more expensive brands because, you know, I just had all the money in the world and like no responsibilities or anything. And now I'm like, okay, I have to buy like the store brand eggs and
Or just what, like what's on sale? Like I don't buy energy drinks really anymore. Yeah, and at the store had a 4-pack of Monster Zero Sugar for $8. And I snapped those motherfuckers up. It's like $2. Okay, good. That's my buy line for an energy drink is like $2. Maybe a little bit more, maybe like $2.30, maybe $2.50 if I'm in the mood for one. But like I'm not fucking paying more than that. So I just nab up those deals.
Good idea.
John Candy is here, the Polka King. Yeah, we mentioned about all of his dialogue was improvised. This is an SCTV reunion with Catherine O'Hara. These are some lovely Canadians, and that was a big time. It was a big time Canadian sketch comedy show.
Oh, I had no idea that she was Canadian.
Yeah, and that's why it's like so cool to see this. That you know, it's the Second City, I think is what it was called. It was nice to see this and just how they play off each other because it's just fully improvised.
Yeah, you can tell that they like vibed with each other. It felt very natural between them both. Like she was, there was times when she was just laughing at him, and you could tell that she's just giggling at him going on. Yeah,
she's just letting him roll, like letting him cook there. And I think same thing with Schitt's Creek was Eugene Levy was on there, and he was SCTV also.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I bet they'd like it when they get a little reunion together.
Oh yeah, Martin Short, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis. So a ton of people from the 80s and 90s. A lot of big names. The 80s and 90s were this Second City from up there.
Kevin, so how long would this? How long would this drive be that they're taking from Scranton to Chicago?
That's Pennsylvania. I'm assuming somewhere in the middle of Pennsylvania. So I'm going to
say Scranton is where the office is set, the Office US.
God, I don't know. Eight hours?
Wow. Okay.
It's Scranton to Chicago?
Yeah.
10 hours and 43 minutes. So I could make an A, but that's not bad. That's not bad. Okay. Yeah,
and
right
then
there.
They're
oh, it's
going
more like
to
Eastern.
Milwaukee. Milwaukee. Where is that?
Yes, Milwaukee is just north of Chicago in Wisconsin, one of the most segregated cities in the United States.
Oh.
Yeah, if you look at a map, it is like, there's where Hispanic, there's Black, there's white. Like, it is.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not the most. I did look that up recently. It is not the most, but it is in the top five, probably top 10 for sure, probably top five. Yeah, heavily, heavily
and
segregated.
That's another 2 hours away from Chicago.
Milwaukee. That is where Love Actually, that dumb cunt, went to.
Milwaukee?
He went to Milwaukee, right?
I can't remember.
That fucking movie.
No, you're right. You're
guy.
Right. You're right. You're right.
Oh, my
you're
God.
Right.
Why did I brought that on myself?
He
just
sucks.
Bringing that stupid fucking movie up. All right. If this is your first episode, go back three or four and hear me.
Watch Love Actually or listen to Love Actually.
You'll get a nice British history lesson at the beginning. I went on a little good. Oh, good thing there.
I need to get the video clip of me just being like,
oh, what? Oh, yeah. Oh, so shocked. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So I'll say that most of the time when I say something at the beginning, Lucy has no idea what it's going to be. Usually it's something like today. It's like a line from the movie. And that one, I just had it typed up and ready to go. And just to
like
see her
script.
like, oh, I had it scripted out, ready to go, to be thinking, how is she going to react?
I don't even remember what I said. I probably was just like, oh.
You went, oh. Yeah, because I brought up like the fucking famine and just the genocide. Oh, like, where's he going?
Oh, dear.
Where's he going? All right. So Kevin goes to a church and cathedrals always get me. I am completely, I'm completely irreligious, but I was raised pretty religious in the sense, not from my parents, but a self-imposed religious Protestant. Same. It was Methodist. It was like this Protestant Christianity, but history is always big the thing. And I made a trip through France over this summer and specifically went to these major cathedrals throughout Chinon and Orléans and Paris. And there's just something about them that just gets me. It's not a spiritual thing with like religion. It was a historical thing. I'll say that. Like in Orléans, I was there for hours just sitting there in that like feeling of it, which is what a lot of religious people will say is the Holy Spirit, is this movement of the music and all that.
It's the music and the way that the building echoes sound and it's glorious.
No, that absolutely does have an effect. The organ and the feeling, like I said, the vibrations and stuff does have an effect on people in that. But this also is a weird thing too, because Christmas music, I don't like secular Christmas music. I only like religious ones. And because it has power, it has meaning. And it's like when people are singing it, Jingle Bell Rock, like nobody gives a fuck about that. But if someone's up there singing, oh, Holy Nights, like they do here, like this shit fucking matters. And it's very, you can envision all this stuff. And like here, it's just, I'm almost getting moved in the middle of this Home Alone by it.
Yeah, I know. I really liked this scene. And I liked that they used this scene to make Kevin see that old man. What's he called? Marley?
Yeah, to humanize him. Yeah, Marley.
Yes, exactly. Humanize him is the perfect word. And I thought that was, it was just the perfect setting. And Kevin's kind of lost at this moment. And old man Marley's feeling the same. And it's just a nice little community feeling there.
Yeah, I think it was also a very good way of putting religion into the movie without ever mentioning it directly and saying like, no, everyone's always welcome at church. But like you said, Kevin was kind of lost. So where's he going to go? He's going to go to church. And that's where he finds, that's where he realizes, oh, this guy's not crazy. He is a person. And then they kind of help each other out right there. Because yeah, Marley's here watching his granddaughter. And I don't know if he's going to try to set him up with them or something. He's like, oh, she's about your age. You know her? Da, da, da. You know, she's pretty nice. In that. He dispels that myth about him. Speaks about how he's not welcome with his son anymore. And they never say it. And I'm not going to lie. Whenever it's a movie like this, and it's this super old guy, I'm like, why did they have a falling out? Like, what could this have been?
It's never confirmed, is it?
No, it never is, and it's not needed.
But to be fair, as soon as he comes around at the end, so it's something forgivable. It's forgivable.
We see it, and like you can almost see the old man like crying. It's like,
I know. We don't need this.
We don't know what is in here. No, they're together. Why did I sound like Jerry Seinfeld there? Like, no, what are you doing? So this scene here, and this is the thing about getting older, I don't ever really remember this scene at all. It never stuck with me. And when it was happening, I was like, this scene right here, the church one where he's talking with Marley. And if you'd asked me about it before, I'd be like, okay, maybe it was in there. This hits for me more now than anything because I can't put myself in the shoes of an 8 or 10 year old kid because I'm not a child. And while I don't have kids and while I have a good relationship with my parents, something like this is almost a universal thing where it's as you grow older, this guy's old, he's pretty lonely, the neighborhood thinks he's a fucking murderer. And now his son won't talk to him because of something he said. And it's just, this is the stuff that is going to mean more to me in movies like this.
Yeah, I think it's very relatable in like a Christmas film as well. Like my heart goes out to people who like don't have a family or someone to go to anytime. But then like at Christmas time, it just kind of hits a little bit harder, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's something I think of more about now with like Mother's Day and Father's Day is... Like some people, they don't have children and their mother or father's dead, or they never had a mother or father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those days are always kind of like they're sweet, but then there's also like a dark side to them as well. It just kind of feel a bit sad about.
All right. Now that everybody's brought down.
Sorry. Yeah.
The last thing to take from this is, and it is so, when I see this stuff, I just want to tell people, this was fucking it, man. This is fucking reality back then, even though it seems nuts. Kevin says that he would get beat up if he wore a sweater with this big old bird on it. And goddamn, if that ain't the truth, okay?
Yeah.
He would get beat up. And you get beat up for most inane things back then. Because, and I remember it, wailing on kids and getting wailed on because you did something gay, which everything was gay back then. Hell, kissing a girl back then was gay.
Yeah, like showing interest or to be seen trying or to be seen to have like an interest in something. It's like, oh.
Well, unless it was sports or action movie or the most masculine things you can imagine. Like, I'm halfway joking about kissing a girl, but it kind of was like, oh, you like somebody. Oh, gay, what do you want to touch a girl? And it's just like, and I tell people that's something now, especially like, you know, hopefully it's being changed more. I know it definitely is with just like the homophobia like that is that's what it was. Like, if a kid showed up in a sweater like that, we were going to launch the worst homophobic slurs and expletives you can imagine at that kid for having the audacity to wear a sweater to school.
It was so normalized, wasn't it? Like, oh, it's completely. Really, it's really, really cringy to think back on.
No, it's why I tell students today when they say something like that, I tell them why it's bad and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, look, I said that stuff when I was younger and nobody told me that it was wrong. And so I grew up thinking it was okay. And we kept saying them. I go, my job is to tell you that it's wrong. One, because you're not going to say it around me. And two, even if you don't believe me or don't want to do it, it's now in your head to where sometime it may get pulled out of that subconscious to be like, oh, yeah, so-and-so said that that was it. And it can start at least getting better. Like, that's how you better society.
Yes, you start the ball rolling. Yeah, I wish more than anything that we had someone to tell us that it was wrong, or someone, if maybe someone thought it but didn't want to say it, you know, in case they then got ridiculed. Like, I wish that someone said it sooner.
Yeah, cheap groceries and homophobia, 1990, y'all.
There you go.
So Kevin goes to defend the house, and we get to this little climax here. Marv says the line of the movie. He says, most kids are stupid. Our kids are stupid. It's just like, hey, fucking men did that.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, so we can kind of go through like maybe the biggest things that stand out of these traps. The first
one. Oh my God. I forgot how fucking crazy these were. Like, I thought they were slapstick comedy. Like, you know, he gets hit with the iron, like, dunk. But some of these are absolutely diabolical.
Okay. I am not overselling this. Remember what you said right there when we get to Home Alone 2. In Home Alone 2, those motherfuckers should be in the morgue. He is trying to kill them in Home Alone 2. Here may be manslaughter. He is trying to murder them. In the
Holy
second
shit.
One,
and
Kevin
was so brutal.
Kevin was not fucking around. In the second one, he was in New York, right? You know, crime.
Yeah.
It's 1992. It hadn't been cleaned up fully yet. But yeah, the first one that happens here, he shoots Harry in the crotch, and the sound of this gun and then him screaming just had me on the floor.
I couldn't believe it because I couldn't figure out what kind of gun this was.
It's got to be a BB gun.
It's a BB gun.
A BB gun or maybe a pellet. It's got to be a BB gun, but it could be a pellet gun too.
Yeah, because originally it's on the bedroom wall of Buzz's bedroom.
And he's shooting the little figures.
Yeah,
he shoots the action figures.
He does, and he's got a great shot. And I was like, that's unrealistic, but okay. And I was like, we know.
America, though. America. Yes. So maybe he's a little shithead. He may be shooting... He's probably killed a few squirrels. He may be a little bit psychotic.
Yeah, you're probably right. But yeah, he shoots him in the crotch and then shoots the other guy in the forehead.
Right in the face.
Point blank range.
Man, yeah. So we get the first reaction shot here. This is where This is where Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern shine. And here's the thing. How at Golden Globe, I think I looked it up. I don't think they were nominated. This is fucking performances. I don't care if it's drama or not. This is better than his performance in Goodfellas, and he was great.
Yeah, they're both so good, and they're so funny. Like, when they're slipping up the stairs that Kevin poured all the water on so they would be icy, it's just, so you know, like, not when they're falling, slipping, but when they're trying to climb and their, like, feet are slipping all over the place. I just think that's so funny. Like, that to me is just... I can laugh and laugh and laugh at that all day.
Yeah, just all it's. And then I wonder, honestly, how much of it also was which ones were like the stunt doubles and which weren't.
But
the falling, I think I saw somebody say, I can't remember if it was Joe Pesci or maybe it was Columbia, the director himself. Someone said that they were almost worried and it was borderline disturbing the punishment the stunt doubles went through.
Aww.
Over and over again, they're saying like, this is almost like not funny and nice because they're taking a beating.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are brutal, and then when they're falling down those stone steps,
God, it's all the way down. Yeah. This is a good note here. Joe Pesci was, I think, cussing at times and hated that he couldn't cuss on the set here. That all of this mumbling he does is just unintelligible noises. It's like fucking Yosemite Sam. Which makes it so much funnier.
Yeah, it's absolute nonsense. It's so, so good. One of my favorite moments as well, which we've went past, is where Kevin like cocks the gun. And I was like, whoa, what the hell is this movie turning into?
Like right before?
He turns around and he goes like, he says something like, this is it, don't get scared now, which I think is a quote from the film he was watching. And then he goes like, chick, and I was like, whoa, where is this going?
Hey, you're going to shoot some people. You got to show what's up.
It was, he was tough.
Yeah, that's the quickest way to show that you're ready. No matter what, even if there's one already in the fucking chamber, you're still going to cock that shit. Yeah. You're still going to cock it. When you come back next time, we're going to get some shotguns. And you're gonna
I don't think I could do it.
We'll get a 20 gauge. We'll get a 20 gauge. You'll be fine.
Oh, God.
A 12 gauge would be fucking
scary
hilarious.
For me.
A 12 gauge would be, I want to see you shoot a 12 gauge, actually, now that I say that, just to see you.
Is that like more powerful
or
something?
Yes, a 12 gauge is more powerful.
I'll probably hurt myself. Like the pistol, I had sore hands.
You better
after
put
that.
It like straight in your shoulder or in it there. Will go flying.
Yeah, no, that's too scary.
It probably bruised your shoulder too, which will be funny.
Probably because the worst part is like nobody showed us what to do. So if they're just going to hand me a shotgun and be like, have fun, like, no, I'm not. I want to be shown how to hold it properly.
If they would have asked, I would have just. If they would have emasculated me like that, I would have been like, no. I was like, we're going to figure it out. And I admit, when we went in there, I was like, okay, which it was a fucking nine too. That it's like, shit, mine, I still haven't ever shot mine. Mine's almost 3 years old.
Maybe you should have taken yours with you.
Yeah, but I haven't shot it at this point right now. It's just, do I want to? No, I will.
Yeah.
I'll do that sometime. That is a 9mm too, so it'll be easy. Now it'll be easy to get ammo. It was hard 2 or 3 years ago to get that ammo. Okay, the Daniel Stern's feet here, like I said before, are Hobbit prosthetic feet, so he's not actually doing it, but the stepping on the ornament can't do it. Can't do it.
No! No!
Which one is worse? The ornament or the nail? The nail. It's
the nail's fine, one and done. The ornament's smashing under his feet and him just the fucking idiot just continuing walking on them. I'm like, what are you doing? And that one's worse for me because it's tiny little pieces of glass. Like you're never getting them out of your feet. And he just continues running around his house.
But what's worse is with the nail is they just show it and you can hear it. Oh, no. No, 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 no,
Kevin,
no.
Kevin is a legit psychopath.
And like I said, the second one, what he does to them is worse. He should have. There's two things off the top of my head. The two things that he does in the second one that they would be fucking dead. Like, no joke. The first thing he does to them. Well, here's a spoiler, okay, for Home Alone 2.
Yeah, go on.
No spoiler of like how it ends. Or shockingly, guess what? He gets a fucking way. There you go. It's a spoiler. The first thing he does to them is throw a brick from like 3 stories tall. And hits Marv right in the fucking head.
He's dead.
And I'm like, he's fucking dead. Like, he's not dead, he's in a coma and he is concussed to holy hell.
Yeah, you're not continuing on for 2 more hours in a film.
That, well, not the first thing in the movie, the first thing at the end when he starts to fight him, but he does continue on for another 20, 30 minutes. That's the first thing he does. And then he takes other beatings. So, yes. Yeah, he is worse in this. I'm telling you, he's trying to fucking kill him. He doesn't want them to ever come back. He's like, oh, they escaped? No, no, no.
We have to kill them.
They are not escaping from the funeral home. They will not do that.
Jesus.
I think I saw, but I forgot to look it up again. The when Marv says to Harry, why the hell are you dressed as a chicken? I think that was improvised. The Daniel Stern got to get that one in.
I think it must have been. Because
where are your shoes? Why the hell are you dressed like a chicken?
Dressed like a chicken, and he's got like a few feathers on.
He's got some feathers on, but it's so much just like, but it's true though. He just walked over these ornaments, did all that. He looks up, he's like, why are you dressed like a chicken? Like, what is there a reason for that? All right.
I liked the super hot door handle. I like that one.
But fucking rich ass McAllisters with the M on there. And they're not even, how rich is the brother who lives in Paris who is paying for 15 people, including like 4 first-class tickets to Paris, be Christmas time.
This guy.
He must be the fucking mayor of Paris or something. God damn. The mayor of Paris is flying them over there. All right. So as they go up the steps, again, a line you only could fucking put in 1990 now. Harry yells out, I'm going to cut off your cojones and boil them in motor oil.
That's not okay.
Okay. So I guess cojones is over there too, is slang.
No, we don't say that here, but I know it from American films.
Oh, okay. Yeah. For anybody that might not know what it is, cojones is basically your testicles, your balls.
Yeah.
So this grown man is telling this child, I'm going to cut off your balls and boil them
in motor oil.
Whatever. He could have boiled them in.
What the fuck?
He could have boiled them in fucking fairy tears or whatever, you know, or unicorn tears. The fact that he's telling the child to cut your balls off. Not to get into anatomy, but they probably haven't dropped yet. So good luck finding those.
Yeah, that's even worse. This is a child.
Yeah, like Jesus, dude. Again, but we don't. If that line was outrageous, we get another one coming up, which is probably my funniest one.
Oh, I think. Yeah, I know what you mean. You're going to say.
Okay. So Kev escapes out the window. Is it right here?
Yeah.
Okay. What is it? What do you have down? What do you think it is?
Well, I wrote, who would ever make a joke about this? And then you did earlier in this episode when he says, where'd he go? And he says, maybe he committed suicide. I was like, what?
That's me pumping my fist there. Yes.
Maybe this 8-year-old boy.
Okay, maybe it was this line that was improvised. Now it's ringing a bell. This might have been improvised. But yes, again, a kid's movie. this guy just, the joke is maybe this kid committed suicide. Like, oh my God, 90s.
That was insane. Insane. I'm
wild.
You know how earlier I said I was feeling sleepy? This is when I was like, whoa.
Jolted you. Oh, me too.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. I just, my elbows flew back to nobody in particular to start like going like, what? Let me hit that 10 seconds back. But yeah. Two laugh out loud moments for me. That's the first one. The second one, I can't deliver it the way he does it, but it's Pesci's delivery of from a treehouse where he interrupts himself, where Marv's just like, maybe he went to call the police. And he's just like, wait, he can't, from a tree. Like, he's so just done with Marv's idiocy that he's going to fucking call the cops from a treehouse. It's unbelievable, hilarious delivery from Pesci right there.
The way those two kind of play off each other is very funny. He's very funny.
Yeah, he's just so over it. From a treehouse, shut the fuck up. Let's go. Let's get it.
He's so done.
He's so over it. But yeah, so they chase him across there. They chase him across the street to this house where Kevin has called the police on. Very daft thinking there. And Marley saves the day. Oh, this is where he kind of bites his finger, which again is just, yeah, we don't need it. Scripts, we don't fuck. He's like, I'm gonna bite your fingers off, Pesci. Columbus, we don't need it. You can threaten it and we get the same fucking thing. You don't need to scar Macaulay Culkin method acting in there. So Marley saves the day and the Chicago PD cartoonishly drive up with the sirens wailing, like flying over like the fucking Blues Brothers.
And nobody's ever done like a, this is the first time they've come back since they said, oh, recount your kids.
Yeah.
Nobody's thought to do like a follow-up call, like a safety thing. It's only when
I know
Kevin calls the cops.
Yeah, pretending to be the next door neighbor. And I know this, I joke about me Chicago PD. This is not fucking Chicago PD, all right? This is a rich-ass white suburb. If the cops get called in a rich-ass white suburb, they will be there in 3 fucking minutes, okay? If not, just say you see somebody darker than a brown paper bag, they'll be there in 2 minutes. Did that. I didn't think it was funny earlier when that cop was just, you want us to go check on them? I'm like, did they not have wellness checks in 1990? Yes. Holy shit.
Why is this not? This would be all over the news. No, yes. It'd be like a child left by themselves. Go help save them.
Again, in a rich neighborhood, when the mom is saying we left our kid there, I could not believe that.
Yeah, there was no follow up for me. I was like, why is it now that they're only coming back?
Nah. All right. And it's a Festivus miracle. The whole family is here. Buzz gives the best compliment that he could, that he didn't burn the place down.
And I forgot to write it down. Oh, he's like, just been hanging out. And I was like, corny movie is corny.
Corny
movie is
corny. Oh, the mom's like, we need, because in the most mom fashion thing, she's been up for 72 or fucking 96 hours or whatever. Everybody just got back. She's like, we need groceries. People need to eat.
Yeah, bless her.
I know.
And little Kevin's like, I got it, mom. I was like, I hope they all love each other.
He's like, I got it. The whole family's going to whoop, 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 whoop. Like jumping back.
You went to the store.
Yeah, that's her. All right. Marley reunites with his exiled family. I guess he was the exile. It's nice.
It is a Christmas miracle. We love it. We love to see it.
That is Home Alone from 1990. What a banger right there. But for then, let's get to the D&D classes where we put everybody. Fuck no. We put the main people in these classes. Again, it gets a little weird here to do it. But we've done Kevin, Harry, and Marv. You know, the three people from the poster.
Course, yeah.
Three people that matter. And the first one we have down seems pretty straightforward. Kevin, rogue. He's very sneaky. He's tricking the whole town. He's setting up traps. Mm-hmm, you know, very good persuasion in that sense, very much trickery. So yeah, Kevin as a rogue seems pretty spot on.
Yeah, no question about it. It says on the D&D website, a scoundrel who uses stealth and trickery to overcome obstacles and enemies. And I mean, that's a perfect description. There was no question on that one.
No, it's a perfect description. It could also describe Harry and Marv, except they didn't overcome those obstacles.
No, they didn't. They failed on that role.
What we got for old Ere?
So Harry we have here is a bard. And I guess that is because he has been inspiring.
He's a leader, I guess. Sure,
he's a leader,
right?
Yeah. Yes. He's kind of using his leader abilities to order Marv around quite a lot.
Yeah, and it could be Rogue as well. Disguises, you know, he dresses the cop. He fools people.
Yeah, true.
Which I'm guessing anybody in a fucking Halloween uniform can walk into that house and just do whatever.
Just, yeah, I mean, they don't give a fuck anyway. Yeah, just come in, make yourself at home.
They don't give a shit there. All right, last one we have is Marv. And the first thing we had down was just jackass. We need to find out. Somebody tell us who knows more about D&D. If someone's just a jackass, what class would that be in? Because what we had down was he didn't think he was an idiot. And when I think of an idiot, I think of a barbarian, because he just goes in, he loses his shoes. He says, fuck it to wrapping his feet or doing anything like that. He's just going to traipse around everywhere, smashing everything in sight in his terrible rage. So yeah, barbarian.
Barbarian, low intelligence, you know, moves first, thinks later. Well, sometimes doesn't think at all. So yeah, I think that was a pretty easy one as well. But then what did it, we played a game of D&D ages ago and you played like a big himbo. What was your class? Do you remember?
You know what? I think maybe
I was a witcher.
Yeah, but was I, if I was a paladin though, I think paladin charisma is pretty high, which maybe that's what I was doing. It was high charisma, but an idiot.
Yeah,
maybe
I was something like that.
I might have just been a fighter, though. That's a good question. What was
we'll
I?
Need to go back and think about that. I think that was when we did a Witcher one with Alyssa.
And it was Tracy was running it. Yeah, it was the one in Toussaint. Yeah, it was the one that Tracy ran where we fucked. No, that was a different one we fucked up. That one we did well on. We did well on that one. I like that back up. All right, so there are your D&D classes. Last thing here is going to be the tier list ranking. S, A, B, C, D in that order from highest to lowest. So yeah, this is an out and out classic. I don't even know when I've watched it because again, I was six when it came out. It's been a staple on American TV forever, especially when you didn't have streaming services, when you're pretty much just limited. It's a cable. When cable used to be like 30 or 40 channels, it was going to be on NBC if I remember that correctly. But as we talked about before, while it's only an hour and 40 something minutes, they repeat several jokes. It does seem to drag a little bit in there. It needs to be cut up a little bit. And so with that in doubt, despite the unbelievable fucking performances, okay, this is what's teetering on there. And I just, I have to knock it down a little bit into the A tier where it'll be just under the S one there. I wanted to put it in there, but it was repeating of the jokes that I was like, oh yeah, just that kind of put it down there. So A tier, solid. So it's a high A tier. Yeah.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I have A tier for this one as well. I don't have the nostalgic attachment to this film. I never watched it when I was younger. This is probably my second watch, and I don't really remember the first watch. But yeah, it felt there was parts to me where I was like, okay, let's move on. I want to get to the finale. I couldn't believe that all the trickery in the house only happens in the last like 30 minutes of the film. The real, you know, where they start, you know, goes like they're actually in the house. So, but I just think Macaulay Culkin is so good. And yeah, those four main characters, the two burglars, mom and Kevin, are just awesome. And it's kind of very, very festive. And I would watch it again. So,
and that's what it's nostalgic for me. It's not the actual movie. It's just it's so Christmassy. Like the house is done up. For some reason, the house is done up with billions of presents and all that when they're not there and they're going to be in Paris. So, OK, but it is a movie. I get it. So, yes, this reminds me of Christmas so much immediately. But that is it. That is Home Alone. Stay tuned right after this. I'm going to tell you what we're doing next week. Next week is the last Christmas holiday movie.
Oh, it is.
It's
going to
be the
right.
last one before. But before that, Lucy, where can we find you? But actually before that, email us podonthepath@gmail.com, patreon.com/onthepath, all that fun stuff there. Check out the Discord. All the links below, again, especially that Instagram and whatnot. And, the YouTubes. Go to the YouTube. I was going to say the YouTube video that we had, not the YouTube. Yeah. The YouTube video we have of our Baldur's Gate run-through. Check out that link below there as well to see us place a little bit of D&D together. All right. Now, Lucy, where can we find you?
You'll find me at Lucy J. Robin on YouTube, on Twitch, on Twitter. Not playing through loads at the moment. Doing my own Baldur's Gate thing, doing a Mass Effect 2 thing. But yeah, gonna maybe do a bit more new stuff in the new year.
There we go. Y'all make sure to follow and look out for that. Where you can find me basically Discord. I don't know why it says Twitch-Discord. Has that always been that way?
All right.
I just noticed that. All right. Yeah. Find me on Discord. That's pretty much going to be the main place, but I look at that pretty much constantly throughout the day. It's a good place to get there. All right. It has holiday season rolls on here, but as I mentioned before, Christmas holiday season is pretty much going to end here for the last week of December, the last date. We've got something tying in without it, but the last holiday Christmas one is Elf,
Ooh, I was about to do.
What were you about to do?
I was about to do a quote, but I remember that it's from Anchorman and not Elf.
What was it going to, was it go fuck yourself, San Diego?
No.
Whale's vagina?
I'm in a glass cage of emotion.
God, I wish you would have said that because I don't know if I would have remembered that.
Just went along with it, it would have been good.
I think I would have been like, hey, I think I would have segued into, I haven't seen this movie in a long time. I'd be like, I don't remember that. Okay. Well, that would be why. All right. So there you go. Join us next week for that discussion. We love ya. We'll see ya.
See you.